Welcome back to another episode of Church of the Geeks, friends. Tonight, Sam and I are joined by returning guests, technically, depending upon their how you want to do it. But we have with us tonight, Derek. Wow, forgot the name already. That's a good host, isn't it? Derek Weston and Chris Maverick. Oh my gosh, I am blaming it completely on the illness. But yes. First off, Sam, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm just as froggy as you are right now. Yes, here in Western Pennsylvania, where the cloud of winter has descended upon us very quickly.
Yeah, forget this winter is coming. It's here. So
it's here.
Yeah. Well, let's go. Derek, why don't you introduce yourself for folks who might not have listened to the Theacon panel, but which you were on with us at Theacon about the redemption in the MCU.
Yeah. My name is Derek Weston. I am a recovering Presbyterian minister. I co-host a podcast, Gospel According to Marvel, with my friend Zane, currently working in Baltimore at an organization called Hope Springs that works with faith communities to serve people living with HIV, and happy to be on with you guys.
Great. Yeah, we are really happy to have you tonight. Yeah. And Chris.
Chris, is that me? I guess
I'm so yes. Not to... I'm sorry, Mav. I'm sorry.
So
yes.
Not used to being called Mav.
I apologize again. It's fine. My brain is on. Yeah,
it is technically my first name. No one ever calls me that, and I always joke about it because, like, literally, my mother and my wife don't call me Chris. Like, no one does. So it's very odd.
If I see you on the street, I don't call you Chris. Right. I don't know why that just bloop, out it came. I'm like, what?
Well, I am Chris Maverick. Your listeners can call me Mav. I am a PhD candidate, I guess. Finishing up my PhD in English Lit and Cultural Studies at Duquesne University. My dissertation is primarily on comic book superheroes and how gender and sexuality have been represented in comic books and in superhero films and TV shows, etc., over the past 100 years, basically throughout the 20th century and these last 19 years of the 21st. And I am the host, or one of four hosts, of a podcast called Vox Popcast, which, as we say every week, is the weekly pseudo-academic roundtable of pop culture analysis with drinking and swearing. I think you've had one of my co-hosts on, Wayne, as one of my regular yeah. co-hosts. And then I have two other co-hosts, Katya and Hannah. And some subset of the four of us are on every week talking about a different pop culture topic.
Yeah, yeah. Your episode about Watchmen was great.
Yes. Yeah, that was
That was a really good episode. I loved
Thank
that
you.
Immensely.
Yeah, that was fun because we had for that one we always try to have some guests. Every once in a while it's just us, but we try to have a varying. The original idea was any kind of conversation that one has at an academic conference, which I go to a lot of, is fundamentally no different than the conversation you have at a comic book store, at a bar, in the hallway at church after the service, and you just kind of are talking about your favorite comic books or movies or the sports game or whatever is in pop culture. It's just that sometimes you might be with your geeky comic book friends who have a certain perspective, and sometimes you might be with your academic friends who have a certain perspective, or your theological friends in your case. And we figured, why not bring people together from different walks of life to discuss the same pop culture thing? So for the Watchmen episode, we wanted to make sure we had some people who were very into comics, but also some people who were very into the Zack Snyder movie, which I didn't like, but it mm-hmm. shouldn't just be my opinion. It should be a discussion. So that's what we did. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really good. And I don't think there was even a whole lot of swearing, so I can recommend that greatly to
there isn't
all of our listeners.
It's just, no, it's that just, one. It's just the tagline because I have to say something.
No, no, it's really, but it does happen every once in a while. Yeah. So, yeah. No, but it was It was really good. I liked it
Thank
a lot.
You. Thank you.
But we're here tonight not to talk about Watchmen, although that would be a whole nother good conversation. But a couple weeks ago, my wife said, I want to go on a date. And I said, okay. And she goes, and I want to go. This is my wife. She plans out things very, very well. So that's awesome.
It was nice of her to invite you on the date.
Yeah,
it was. We went out. We had a nice dinner. We had a little bit of wine, and we went to see a movie. We went to go see. She wanted to go see Harriet, and we went to go see Harriet because it had been, you know, she remembers doing something in middle school on Harriet Tubman, and so she was really looking forward to a good treatment of this historical figure. I was interested because there had been a little bit of disturbance in the Twitterverse and around this, which caught me completely sort of off guard. And I was like, should we go see it? But I was like, okay, we're going to go see it because it wasn't overwhelming. Harriet is the story of Harriet Tubman. Sorry,
and
go ahead,
I was
Sam.
Just going to say that I really, this wasn't on my radar at all until you mentioned it. And I was I knew it was out, but it seemed like it was just such a very small, not very talked about movie that it wasn't something that was on my radar screen at all. But then, you know, when you brought it up, I was like, okay, we'll give this a shot. And, you know, with my on occasion free movie passes, I was like, hey, this will be good use of some time if I don't do it up. If at least not good use of my money, so we'll see what happens.
Right. Well, it's at first I was like, well, I'll go see it, even though I can't. It's probably not ever going to be fodder for the podcast, which is not the only reason I go to see movies, I swear. But it's nice when they align. But I thought this is actually really good fodder for a conversation because it's part biopic, it is part like hagiography.
Yeah.
And part superhero flick. I mean,
kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's kind of unstoppable in this movie. So I'm just going to stop there and let you folks jump in and just your impressions about the movie, what you thought, sort of what grabbed you about it or not.
Derek, how about you start? I'm curious to hear what your thoughts were.
Similarly, it was not on my radar. When the first trailer came out, there was kind of an initial, like, ooh, everyone should go see that. And then that died down over the weeks and months. And then there was some backlash, and I wasn't sure what the backlash was. And I actually, after seeing the film, kind of went back on Facebook and said, okay, everyone, what's the backlash from that? I enjoyed the film quite a bit, and I do feel like I have to go back and do a little bit of checking against history, because I'm sure, you know, there's always liberties taken in the system. But it was
liberties.
I expect that. Like I mean, I never expect kind of a pure biography. But there was, you know, like you said, there's kind of this really interesting mystical quality to Harriet that is played up throughout the film. And it's talked about in terms of faith, but it's also kind of like she's a precog. And there's all these interesting things that are going on. And she's got this, I think one of the more moving parts of the film is this kind of this montage of her rescuing groups of people in this kind of this unstoppable manner that feels very much like a superhero film. And it very much kind of plays out like a, in some ways, like a superhero origin film. So I thought it was entertaining, you know, like, you know, history to the side. And, I think, you know, I never expect a pure biography. I always expect that liberties are going to be taken and these sorts of things. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was on the verge of being great and didn't quite get there. I thought there were pieces of it where it was like it was so close to being a really great film and didn't quite stick the landing. But I think there's a lot to talk about. In terms of the treatment of Harriet as a character, her abilities, quote unquote, and then kind of particularly like in this, the ways that race and gender are handled in the film are also pretty interesting.
Right. Mav, what were your thoughts?
I liked it a lot. I actually very much enjoyed this movie. I guess we'll get into the issues in a little bit. Like, I knew what they were going in. I knew what some of the complaints were, and I knew that it wouldn't be historically accurate. I have issues with people who kind of go to movies that this wasn't historically accurate and this is why it sucks, that happened particularly with films which are let's face it, the main purpose of this movie is we need to know more about African American history because a lot of it has been historically occluded, often intentionally, but sometimes just through lack of interest in some of the white filmmakers over the last several decades. So there is that issue, but also I don't necessarily expect even something that purports to be a biopic. I don't expect it to be massively accurate. I expect it to be informed by history. Outside of that, I think it was very nice that you referred to it as, as part superhero story, because it kind of was. And yeah, there were elements that, and I know this is not the thing that people are complaining about as far as the historical inaccuracy, but 7 years ago, I went out and saw a movie about Abraham Lincoln hunting vampires, and I loved it. So, so not historically accurate. And wasn't trying to be. So I look at it in that vein. And in that vein, this was a better movie than Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It was. I enjoyed this. And I think it's important. And I think that, I don't think you can go out and watch this movie and then expect to get an A on your eighth grade, history test the next day, because it's not 100% accurate. But what is the purpose of making films about historic figures? It's not to teach you everything. It's to get the audience at least invested in saying, I didn't know about that about Harriet Tubman. Maybe I should look it up and see what more I don't know about her. And then you find out about the liberties that were taken.
Clearly, whatever controversy was out there did not stop the box office success. No. I mean, it was pretty successful. Mm-hmm. And I think for all of the reasons you guys said, it was good. I enjoyed it a lot. I had issues. There were a few things that made me scratch my head at times. But yes, that was it was really enjoyable. Sam, I can't remember if you weighed in or not. I don't think you have.
No, I haven't weighed in yet.
Did you have go ahead.
I actually was a bit disappointed at times in it. They were like kind of small things, but they detracted from the movie for me. One was the music, in that I kind of expected it to maybe be more of a period piece. And it at times reminded me more of like a Hallmark film. And it in like the way it was shot, the way it was, the way that the music kind of had this orchestral vibe, but like a, not a very well done, or at least in my mind, orchestral vibe to it, and is kind of like playing on a lot of emotions and things like that. So that the kind of early on kind of, detracted that, for me. But I did, have to say that, yeah, there were parts in there. I was like, I didn't know this about Harriet Tubman. And I, was looking up more about her afterwards, and especially around her experiences, surrounding her mystical experiences, mm-hmm. because that I thought was really interesting. I wanted to see if that was something that they were handling accurately, or if it was something that they were embellishing upon. And maybe that can be a good segue to kind of talk about the mystical elements and how we thought that was kind of characterized, because that was something that I honestly did not know that much about. I did not know about Harriet Tubman was that the mystical part of her experience and how that figured into her role. And I kind of mentioned to Brian afterwards is that one of the things I thought was a little bit forced, but apt was when one of the characters in the film, you know, talked about, we're going to burn Harriet to this, or we're going to burn her to the stake, just like Joan of Arc. And
yeah, that was, I felt really heavy handed, like, in case you don't get what we're doing.
Yeah,
here,
exactly.
That was one of those.
It's also very much up, and I'm the bad guy because, you know,
yes,
let you know, audience.
Yes.
And it kind of made, it was like, right. I thought Joan of Arc was a good person, and but maybe that was something that was lost on the writers. Maybe
No. I think I don't think it was lost on the writers at all. I think that was much a "Hi, I am the villain, and therefore I am appreciating the you know, the, it's like just like that Hitler, you know, like you're supposed to like go,
yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
I see, bad guy, Red Skull moment,
right." But it did really draw some parallels between Joan of Arc and her own experiences, and how, you know, she had these mystical experiences to lead people, you know, through, you know, great turmoil and you know, lead a country in many ways, and also had, you know, thoughts afterwards about Saint Teresa of Avila and her mystical experiences. And how those were kind of communicated to her. And in the same way, it was interesting to think of Harriet Tubman as following in the line of these, you know, in many cases, great saints of the church. You know, this person who was a slave that was, you know, uneducated, lived a very simple, poor life, but yet out of those humble circumstances came to do much greater things. Mm-hmm.
So
this is a good time to talk about what were your reactions to maybe how the how her mystical experiences were kind of portrayed in the film. Do you think it was beneficial? Do you think it was too simplistic? Did it raise questions for you?
For me, the answer to both of those questions is yes. It was simplistic, but I also think it was necessary. And it's particularly because of exactly what Sam said, which is Sam said, I did not know that she was known to have visions. Now, I personally, and this is probably a big difference. I did know that Harriet Tubman, it was a person who at least professed to have visions. I knew that. I've known that since I was a child. The difference being that, and Derek, you might be able to, I'm curious how you feel, because I was taught that as a child, but also I was a black kid whose parents were, my mother very much wanted us to have black history, which wasn't taught a lot in schools in the 70s and 80s when I was in school. So it was something that I learned when I was young. Now, I don't know that that is taught everywhere. It's not something that I see a lot in history books now, but it's something that I knew, and it's part of her story. And I think that that's, you know, sort of a little better than just sort of the Wikipedia worth of knowledge that most people have. So is it, I mean, it was treated kind of superhero-ish. It was treated, yeah. It was very Hollywoodized, and I understand that. On the other hand, you know, it's not, you know, this wasn't a 14-part PBS series. It wasn't a history book. It was 2 hours in the movie theater, you know, and it had to entertain right. people. So I thought they handled it, you know, exactly as well as, I mean, because it wasn't just her visions. She's also, I mean, she has her, you know, her Moses moment, right? She's sitting there, she's going to wade across the, you know, across the sea and,
right.
and lead her people to, you know, to freedom by, it's not a sea, it's a river. But those things, you know, those are very clearly sort of a painting her as a biblical figure, which, you know, her nickname was Moses in real life. Like that's an earned illusion.
I also knew some of that, again, just from like less from my parents, more from being in Black churches and hearing those things in Black churches. But in very like spiritualized ways, and like we know that that was God speaking to her and using her, and like okay, we don't know that, but all right, let's leave that where it is. And I think the film does because that was kind of in the back of my mind, like it wasn't immediately my first thought, because it's first what you see are like images that feel like your typical flashbacks in a film. They are images that seem like, oh, this is her seeing mm-hmm. images from her past, and that's what happens in every film of someone having had a traumatic experience and then having flashes of that traumatic experience. Then you start to, as the film develops, you start to understand a little bit more the role that those images, those flashes that she's having, really play in the film. And it's handled. It's not quite played up to the point of like Spidey sense. It's not quite there, but it's almost there. It's almost Spidey sense. That she's mm-hmm. she's having these moments where she has this kind of tapping into another sense, a sixth sense, if you will. And it's you know, I think what's interesting about it,
yeah,
is the various ways that it's handled, not just kind of visually, but kind of in the narrative. There is the obviously her understanding of it is God speaking to her. When she's in William Still's office, he writes down that she might have brain damage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I just want to note there, to me, that was interesting because that is literally the only part of the runtime yeah. of the film that him, and he doesn't say it out loud, he writes down possible brain damage in a book, and it is the only acknowledgement in the film that maybe she's not literally being talked to by God.
Yeah.
For the most right. part, the film takes for granted that this is a real superpower, that she is effectively using the Force or Spidey sense or whatever, but she's got, you know, God is speaking to her, and Stills, the guy who writes down possible brain damage, becomes a believer over the course of the film, clearly, because he never mentions it again, and it's not, I mean, if we want to go the scientific argument, then arguably she might have had brain damage. She did suffer head trauma. However, in the course of the film, it's never not right. Like her visions, if she's worried that like the bad guys, that the slave hunters are chasing her, she stops, she closes her eyes, she communes with the great beyond, and God tells her go left, and then she's right because the slave hunters are coming from the right, so she goes left. And like it never doesn't work. So
yeah, because at some point you can't argue with the results. At some point you have to say, well, okay, something is making this woman untouchable. Something is making. I mean, and again, it's very like it's hard now not to think of it as a superhero film because like it follows so many of those tropes where like at some point people start to see the person acting in their power and they're like, oh, well now I'm a believer. And that's exactly what that character does. He starts to buy into the narrative that she is, telling about herself.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a default. This is what's happening with one little skeptical voice. That happens with it. I am interested in the notion of historical accuracy, because I'm torn. So that moment mm-hmm. where she crosses the river, right, and becomes Moses, right, leading the people across the Red Sea, right. I read the Bible. It doesn't have to be a literal parting of the sea, mm-hmm. right? For me, like, so that's the thing, that it doesn't have to be. At the same time, there's the whole notion. The historical accuracy of a movie of, say, Green Book, right, which has been called into question and which has many issues along the way. Like, it seems that there's a road we have to walk. Like, we don't have to, just because we're willing to accept some of this historical stuff in fabrication a little bit here in one place, but not over here. It's complicated, but it is true that she was hit in the head by something that the slave master threw at her, right? After which she had these seizures or whatnot, right? So it blends in here. It complicated.
So I haven't seen, in full disclosure, I haven't seen the Green Book yet. My understanding of the frustration and the pushback of the historical inaccuracies of responses to the Green Book was that those inaccuracies were done in a way that they centered the story of the white protagonist, and kind of diminished the role of the African Americans who are part of the story. I think part of what might be different here is that I think a lot of the, for better or for worse, I think a lot of the liberties that were taken here were done to further the narrative of Harriet as the hero. And I think that, I think whether or not that's better or worse, again, with understanding that, again, the understanding that I have, that no biopic is going to be completely historically accurate. I think there's a difference there in terms of, are you making those historical adjustments to propel a certain narrative? And I think that's really what's in question here.
I think that's fair, mm-hmm. Because. I had seen Green Book, and I came out of going, oh, that was all right. And then literally like 2 days later, it won the Best Picture Oscar, and like the internet exploded. And I was reading through stuff. I was like, oh yeah. And I think that was exactly right. It was everything centered around making the white guy look yeah. good. All so much of it was not about making the Mahershala Ali. Yep, it's the cold. Mahershala Ali. Yeah, thanks. His character mm-hmm. looked right. good. It was not at all about that. So,
and I,
that was very much the white savior issue.
And I understand. And that was sort of my problem with the criticism of Harriet. Okay, so with Harriet, the criticism began before the film came out because they felt like they were adding a white savior to the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was not true. There is no white savior in this movie at all. White guys are bad in this movie. Very yeah. much so.
Or silent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, is not accurate. There were many white abolitionists in her time, who frequently would look quite racist by our standards today. You know, if you want to go for historic accuracy, most people in 2019 wouldn't particularly like Abraham Lincoln's attitudes towards race.
Sure.
It was a different
time. Right.
That said, you know, he plays an important role in the abolition of slavery, so you can't diminish that. It's a different time. So once the film came out, the criticism that I've seen switched from the white savior issue, which isn't there, to, well, why did they have to invent this black bounty hunter who's hunting slaves? Which that is true. Bigger, the character in the film, is a fictional character. That said, the reason they were invented, that he was invented, is because they also wanted to call attention to the fact that this was an actual issue during the Civil War. Prior to the Civil War, there were black bounty hunters who were assigned to hunt slaves, and it's a problem, and it's an issue of history that we don't necessarily talk about a lot. And if we're going to be calling attention to the positive aspects that we don't pay attention to, we should probably talk about the negative ones too. So I didn't have a problem with that. Sure, it's not historically accurate, but as Derek was saying, biopics aren't that. And people need to understand the difference between a biopic and a documentary. I like both. I did know this film was coming out because it's a movie, and if there's a movie, I'm going to see it. That's just how I am with movies. You know, I am an addict. I will watch anything. The difference I can say between something like this or something like Green Book, which I think was the best movie, but the best example I can give is there's a 1952 movie. I don't know if any of you ever heard of, called Red Ball Express. Has anybody ever heard of it?
No.
Okay. Red Ball Express is a film from 1952. It is about, let me read it from IMDb. It is the story of military truck drivers who kept the Allied army supplied in Europe during World War II. The Red Ball Express was a military convoy that basically, they were soldiers, but their job wasn't to fight. Their job was to run supplies to the front line and then run the dead back. Like, they're just driving they're driving back and forth with supplies and dead, and they're getting shot at a lot. It's the supply run. I've known this in my entire life. The reason I've known this my entire life is because my grandfather was on the Red Ball Express. That was his commission during the war. He had medals because of it. Now my grandfather also is, you know, much like myself, was a black man. the cast of Red Ball Express is Jeff Chandler, Alex Nichol, Charles Drake. Well, hold on, let's see. Jeff Chandler, Alex Nichol, Judith Braun, Charles Drake, Jacqueline Duvall, Sidney Poitier, Hugh O'Brien. I don't know if you know who any of those people are, but only one of them is a black guy.
I was going to say, I know one, and he's the black guy.
The rest of the cast is white. There is one token black guy in the film Red Ball Express. Now, if you know anything about how World War II era military battalions worked, they were not racially integrated. They were all segregated. There were black squads and there were white squads. And if there were any white people in a black squad, it would just be commanding officers. Most of the squadron in a black squadron would be black. Everybody on the Red Ball Express was black. In the film, they're all white except for Sidney Poitier, who was already famous. Yeah. So this is it. Now, is it a biopic? Yes, it's a biopic. Arguably about my grandfather's life story. Now they're all fictional characters in the film, so nobody plays my grandfather. But they're all essentially playing my grandfather and his friends. That's what the movie's about. Except where they reverse the race, because they're like, well, this is a heroic story. Let's put all white people in it. And that, to me, you know, that is literally textbook whitewashing. That is a problem that happens when you erase history. Because the most notable thing about this squadron is that they were a bunch of black heroes, so they just made them just heroes. Like, I understand that criticism, but that's not what they did here. What they did was they took a real life problem and they represented it in the story by fictionalizing it. That's different.
By one character.
That's different than you know, Hidden Figures did this, right? Hidden Figures added the Kevin Costner character, who's not real. And people were like, whoa, yeah, they added a white savior. I'm like, yeah, but he's really, he represents, they added one guy to represent all of the good white people because everybody else in that film is awful.
Right.
And, you know, also one of the Hidden Figures, which is a movie that I loved, by the way, but Hidden Figures has the problem that they're trying to, you know, she's trying to solve the equation fast enough so that they can figure out the exact launch window before they shoot, you know, they shoot Glenn into space, or they shoot people into space. And in real life, Glenn just wasn't going to launch. He said, I'm not going unless she, you know, because it's basically like they, there's a scene in the movie, the climactic scene in the movie is, you know, they're doing the countdown, you know, they're like 30, 29, 28. And she's sitting there at this chalkboard trying to math faster, you know, and that's not how NASA works. Basically now in real life, she did, you know, Catherine did basically solve the problem that led us go into space, but she did it. And then 2 weeks later, we went into space. like she wasn't doing it at the seconds of launch because that would be stupid. You know, that's not right. How NASA's not idiots, but that wouldn't have made a good movie. You know, they compressed the timeline of literally about 15 years into like for that movie. Like things happen in weird order. Like all the three women who star in that movie in real life, there's like a 20-year age gap between them. They're just, you know, but they made them all contemporaries because that made for a better movie. But it's important because you need to tell that story. Like I understand, like I think you can take liberties for a film for the benefit of filmmaking and to make a good story so that it's not just reading a history book. And that is different than taking a liberty to sort of create a racial problem. And like I don't see that here. I don't see them creating a problem by including a black bounty hunter because those people sadly existed.
Well, and Mev, I'm actually gonna go a step further. Not only do I not see a problem there, I think it's really good that that character is included. I think it's really important that they showed sort of the diversity of the black experience in that space and time. That there were people who were enslaved. There were people who were free. There were people who were willing to go with Harriet to freedom. And there were people who were like, no, it is not worth it. Some of us don't have the luxury to run. Some of us need to just stay here and figure out how to stay sane. And yeah, there's going to be people who are going to try to capitalize off of these situations because that's human nature. And that is the diversity of people having the human experience. And for me, you know, had it literally been an all black and white thing where the black guys are good and the white guys are bad, and like there is no complexity and nuance to the experiences of humanity, both for white people and for black people, that would have
trivialized the experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I thought it. For me, that scene, the way I saw it, and I might be completely off base, but I thought it added an extra element of just how much Gideon was the slave master, right? Because even though Bigger was helping him track down Harriet, when he gave him the command that he wanted her taken alive and he goes to kill her, that the reason he shot her was because he is the white man and he needed to be
Gideon.
Obeyed.
Yeah, he shot bigger.
He shot bigger, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Gideon shot bigger.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, sorry. I told you to take her alive. And
purely
so
he could kill her. Yeah. He wants her dead. Right. Gideon is going to kill her. He just has to be able to kill her himself because it's his property to kill.
On his turn.
And I think that's an important. Yeah. I think that's an important statement.
Right. So for me, I saw that. I was like, "This isn't a white savior. This is still another layer of white supremacy." Right. Because there's that moment where you might be led to think it was pretty subtle, but you almost may like to think that it's almost like Gideon and Bigger. It's kind of like a buddy flick, you know. There they are, and they're going through, and they're chasing down the outlaw.
But there's no equality there.
That is.
Not
from Gideon's point of view.
Exactly.
Bigger might have thought so. Bigger thought that that he was an equal.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Yes, yeah. I think that's right. Because he makes didn't he make the crack about getting the money to sleep with white women, right? Which I'm sure was part of that.
Yeah,
hatred. Yeah. Gideon hated Bigger.
Absolutely, and I think that is an important statement to make. And you know, again, it's just so odd to me that people whenever anybody has a problem with fictionalization in a biopic. I mean, I watch Avengers movies, you know, and I don't care what the biopic is, like every, you know, the reason we have different interpretations of, you know, there's a dozen movies about Lincoln. There's a dozen movies about Jesus. It's probably hundreds, right? There's 100 movies about George Washington, about Martin Luther King, because people have different takes on something and they have something to say that they're saying through this story. And yes, I realize that, you know, unfortunately, we only really have one Harriet Tubman movie and we should probably have more. But just because it's the first movie, that doesn't mean that the filmmakers don't have an artistic statement that they want to say. And part of that statement is the nuances of race relations, even going back 150 years.
Right. And even like thinking about, you know, origin stories, how many different origin stories are there of a single character?
Right.
You know, just thinking of Spider-Man, how many times they had Spider-Man origin stories? And it's telling the same story in many different ways with different characters and different settings and different ideas of what this person is like. And each one of those, you know, hits on different themes and so on. And, you know, some hit better than others. But then, there's always the idea of, well, this is, you know, different than the history of it, which is interesting because the history is completely fictional anyway. You know, looking at the origin story and here, you know, with Harriet, you know, you're not going to be able to tell a complete story in, you know, a 2-hour film. And if you do tell a complete story, it's probably going to be really tedious. And what liberties do you take? And what's the purpose of those liberties? And I think, you know, like distilling some of these characters down is a great way of telling a story and making it something that is much more relatable and tellable and memorable.
Yeah, I was in a storytelling class that I took a few years back, but the trick was it was not the case that some folks said don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
right
it's not that that's not what's going on here. It is helping the story by making some decisions.
There's a difference between testifying in a court of law and telling a story on a screen or telling a story to your kids. I mean, I'm just thinking like any story that you might tell, right? Like you're telling a story of, you know, Daddy, how did you and Mommy meet? You're going to leave certain things out that don't make you or your mother look or their mother look favorable, or that maybe involve adult situations that you don't want your children to know about, right? Like there are things that you modify. And that's because you're not trying to tell somebody the every detail that's monotonous. You're telling a story, you're entertaining as well as informing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people don't acknowledge the value of necessarily.
Well, right. Well, I think the same issue happens within the Bible when folks forget that there are different genres, right? And so the story, like everything then becomes the same for some say Christians, right? And that right? The mythical side of things becomes
right
science textbook.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have different genres. We have different narratives. We mm-hmm. have different purposes for the stories. And so I think it's the same.
Even the most brief version. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there's a reason there's four of them, right? You don't really need four gospels. You could have just done it once, I guess. But
yeah, they're different. or there are more than just
ignoring the
four, but
yeah,
they're
ignoring the Gnostics and the apocryphal ones. But yeah, yes. even in the most common version of the Bible, they do it four times because there are different takes that sort of highlight different issues.
Recognizing Absolutely. That there are four Absolutely. Different audiences and that they right. need to have
yes.
at least four different things to sustain their faith journey.
Mm-hmm. Right. And something too I was thinking about during what we were talking about, kind of how narratives are shaped by authors and so on, is that we shape our own narratives as well. You know, those memories that we have, we collect and we shape them and we paint them in certain ways and we, you know, project them out there, and then those narratives shape
yeah.
ourselves and shape the way we think about ourselves. And I think, and that also I think was evident in Harriet too, in that, you know, this narrative gets painted about her as Moses, you know, this person who is obviously a white man in blackface, because a black woman could never do this. And
that I found fascinating. That so was that, one of the best parts of the movie. Was that they were arguing that.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Right. Which added to the kind of the superhuman nature. I was like, oh, there's no way that she could do that. And then when she finds out that, you know, this wasn't something that she had painted herself, it was something that she kind of, that she had found out about. And then she's like, oh, I'm Moses then. And she took on that name and that character and shaped in that narrative that she was shaping, ended up shaping herself as well.
And I think that's another really fun, in my mind, it's another really fun kind of superhero parallel, is the idea that she kind of takes on multiple identities throughout the film. You know, she's Minty when the film starts, and like she clearly has to leave that behind. The name Harriet Tubman that she picks is you know, her mother and her husband's
first husband, yeah,
and her husband's last name.
Yeah.
And so there's this ideal of the life that she's going to have that is the reason she takes this name. But then, like, when it really comes down to, like, being in the thick of things, she's Moses, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's yeah. actually her real superhero name. That's who she really is. And I think it becomes a really fascinating exploration of how she lives into those three different names throughout the film, mm-hmm. based off of who she's in contact with, and how other characters around her begin to see her as the evolving person as well. You know, when she arrives in Philadelphia, she's Minty, and she becomes, you know, she becomes Harriet Tubman. But like, as the legend about her grows, she kind of becomes Moses there too.
For me, right. There's an additional layer in that the identities that she uses vary by who she's addressing beyond that. Because so the interesting one is she makes a definite decision when she gets to Philadelphia and still says, okay, you can have any name you want. And she says, well, I'll take Harriet, the name of my mother, and Tubman, the name of my husband. That makes sense. It's the kind of thing that someone does. Okay, fine. But then when she goes, the first time she goes back home, she allows her family to continue calling her Minty. This is my, you know, this is my brother. It's my sister. It's my mom and dad. Minty is who they know her as, until they piss her off. And then I think it's her brother who's like, I don't trust your vision. I'm going this way. Yep. And she fires her gun in the air and she says, I am Harriet Tubman. Yes. I am in charge here. You know, this is literally her taking command. Yeah. Harriet Tubman is a symbol. You know, Minty is this person that she grew up with. And she says, from now on, you will call me Harriet Tubman. And, you know, this is my show. I'm in charge. That's who I want to be. But then Moses is the name that she uses when she's talking. Moses is a character that she wants the slave owners to be afraid of. That is an additional identity.
Yeah.
But she does refer to herself when she's talking to the Underground Railroad. She says stuff like, I'm Moses. I'm, you know, like it, it's, you know, that is her. That's her Avenger name, right? It's very much a, I'm, this is who I am when I'm going to work. Yes. But then I thought, even after all that, after she's living as Harriet Tubman, except for when she's living with Moses, when she goes back, I don't think it's in real life. I don't think it's the final time she ever went back, but it's the final time we see her go back in the movie. When she goes back and gets her parents, she allows, you know, the first time she sees her mom, she goes, Mom, it's me, it's Minty. Right. And she allows her dad to call her Minty because, unlike her brother, they had not pissed her off. You know, this is mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy, yeah. I will use the name that you gave me. So it really is I choose the identity that I am using, respective of who I am dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see how those names work, and that Minty was the name that she was told. It was the name that she was given and by her masters. And then Harriet was the name that she chose for herself. And then Moses was the name that she was, you know, it was a title that was bestowed upon her that she lived into.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we're about near the end here. Any other thoughts or comments that we didn't get to?
I mean, I think people should go see it. It is... One of the things that before the controversy started, one of the things that I saw, I don't know who saw it, who posted it originally. It was just a meme going around, maybe 2 months ago when the trailers first started dropping for it. I saw someone post, oh my God, they're making a Harriet Tubman movie. We're going to go see this just like we did with Black Panther, right? And, you know, this needs to be the biggest movie. And I thought, no, it's not going to be the biggest movie because Black Panther, yes, Black Panther was a black superhero movie, but it was still a superhero movie. And that's what this is going to be, what it's going to be. Like, there's no biopic that, I mean, like Green Book, Bohemian Rhapsody, these were biopics last year. They're not going to be as big as Avengers movies. That's just, right. I'm sorry, that's the world we live in. But I don't want the controversy around this because I don't feel like the controversy is that big. It's there because I'm looking for stuff like that because it's what, you know, it's what we do, right? But I don't want the controversy to occlude this because I think it's a movie that I think it's both enjoyable and I think it's important that people at least try to see for the sake of the movie itself. Just it is important that we make films like this because there are black historic heroes, Asian historic heroes, lesbians, gays, you know, there are more great people in history than the white men that we build on Mount Rushmore. And I would hate for someone to sabotage a film like this and low turnout to make these stories go away.
I want to echo that 100%. And in fact, when I, like I said, I got back from the film and then I immediately posted on Facebook, like, okay, can someone explain to me what the controversy was here? And a friend of mine, an African-American woman, said, you know, basically, I heard there's a white savior, therefore I'm not going to see it. And like that, for some reason, I had like this irrational anger, sadness, because exactly what Mav just said, that like these stories, first off, we need to encourage the industry to tell these stories. And like we encourage the industry to tell these stories with our dollars, right? And and at the same time, I think we're, you know, and I don't want to get into like cancel culture stuff, but like we are so quick to hear one damning thing about something and say that and it's over. Therefore got no redeeming value. And there are again, there's a beautiful story here. There's some beautiful performances. There are some, like, I'm pretty much dead inside, but there were some parts that really moving for me in this film, and like I want people to see it, and I want people to we can engage its imperfections. At the same time, I don't want us to say, okay, all right, so this was the imperfect movie about Harriet Tubman. It was also the first crack at it, and let's encourage the next filmmaker, right, who's going to make the next Harriet Tubman movie to like do the thing that this one was missing, or to tell the other stories that need to be told. So, I 100% agree with you.
I want to point out the cast. We didn't really talk about their names, but the woman who plays Harriet, yeah, her name is Cynthia Erivo. I think she pronounces her last name. Classically trained Broadway actress, really, really good. Also, William Still is played by Leslie Odom Jr., who, you know, if you're a Hamilton fan,
yes,
reason enough to go see this movie. Even bigger, the character that people are worried is problematic. Bigger Long, played by Omar Dorsey. He's amazing, really good in this. He's not the biggest part of the movie, but given his role, being a bad guy, he's very good in it. Plus some of my other
He's very good in the role.
But you know, plus Joe Alwyn plays Gideon, Janelle Monáe is in it. People I like.
Janelle Monáe is in it, and that's reason enough to see.
I'm sorry, what was that?
As is Vondi Curtis Hall. Who plays the Reverend, and one of the finest actors that I will watch anything with him in it.
Fantastic.
I was going to bring that when you started talking about the cast. I was like, oh, I think it would really be remiss not to bring up the preacher, because you know he starts the movie, and what your first experience with him is him standing on the slave master's porch, telling the slaves to obey their masters, right? But you learn he's more than that, right? And it's. I loved his character.
So I think people should go see it. Great cast. I don't know, and you know what I would love is for this movie to get big enough to get a little bit of Oscar buzz, and I don't know that it will. But several people I don't think she's going to win win best lead. The role's just not meaty enough. But I would love to see her get nominated, and nominations. Vondi Curtis Hall absolutely deserves a nomination for being the Reverend. Like he was really good in that role, and I think Omar was great too. So as bigger, I want people to see this film. I think it's important to at least try movies like this. You know, spend $10, go to a matinee.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad my wife wanted to go to it, but
And even though I didn't like it as much as everyone else, I left there thinking that I would like to take my kids to this movie, because I think that I would like it to impact them in the same way that and it was engaging, and learning something about not only African American history, but God working in the world and in the midst of that, and the role of faith and family and courage and those things.
Yeah. So
very good. Well, we're at the time for us to ponder then, or to talk about. What are you geeking out about?
Thank you for letting me go first.
Derek, what are you geeking out about?
Probably maybe stealing someone's thunder. The Mandalorian, man, I'm so into The Mandalorian right now. Ooh. I mean, honestly, like, I'm geeking out about Disney Plus in general. Like, I took like a 20-minute detour down the Disney afternoon from my childhood and like listened to all the theme songs from like Darkwing Duck and Rescuing. Like, I mean, so I'm geeking out about Disney Plus in general, but very specifically, really loving the aesthetic of The Mandalorian. Really loving the very Star Wars meets Western, loving the kind of episodic nature of it. The theme song's been stuck in my head since the first episode. I'm totally geeking out about The Mandalorian, and like Friday just can't get here fast enough.
Awesome. Awesome. Mav, how about you?
Knowing that I was going to have to say this for the show, I was originally going to say Watchmen, but we talked about me doing a whole show on Watchmen at the very beginning of this show, so I won't use that one. You should go listen to our episode on Watchmen, though, and you should watch the new Watchmen show, because the Watchmen show is great. So
absolutely. Everybody, yes, absolutely.
So given when this is dry, there's so much good superhero TV shows right now, and also just geek TV shows in general. So but given when I think this episode's dropping, I am looking forward very much to the Arrowverse Crisis crossover that's coming up. I don't even know what to say about it, because when they first announced it, I sort of was thinking, this is going to be dumb, and it's going to be one of those things which I hate, which is just they're putting so many people in it that it's just going to be constant Easter eggs. But as it gets closer and closer, I don't even care what the story is. I just want to watch it as the 9-year-old boy inside of me and go, oh my God, look, it's Burt Ward. Oh, look, you know, like, this is like, I am so looking forward to just, you know, to 5 solid hours of television where I just point at stuff. It's like, that's what this is going to be. And if it's a good story, even better. But like, I cannot wait to go, there's 3 Supermen on screen. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
I'm behind the times.
Sam, what are you doing?
I'm geeking out on Stranger Things, but I've been.
Oh yeah.
Kind of really digging into that. I love the characters and the story of that. I love that the most horrifying thing in the whole show is growing up.
What season are you on?
I'm on the most recent one. Yeah. But yeah, it's just kind of like, I'm just sitting down, and I started watching it when it first came on, and then I dropped off, I think, for other things. And then I'm like, nope, I'm starting back up again. And so I've been kind of quickly digesting it and enjoying it. I am looking forward, when I'm done with Stranger Things, though, I'm planning on jumping on the Disney Plus, and I definitely want to check out the Mandalorian. So
it's wonderful.
Outstanding.
It seems like it's able to make Star Wars surprising and good, which is something that doesn't happen today.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's so much, if you guys do an episode, I wonder if we should do one too. There's so much I have to say that I don't want to ruin because Sam hasn't watched any of it. It's a great show. Same thing with Watchmen. Watchmen is a great show that even ties into some of the stuff we've been talking about today. But in case people haven't watched it yet, I don't want to ruin any of it. So,
well,
right.
I know there's a baby Yoda.
That's okay. So Mandalorian's Lone Wolf and Cub. if you've been on the internet, Mandalorian is Lone Wolf and Cub in the Star Wars universe, which is amazing. And probably most of your listeners are saying, "What's a Lone Wolf and Cub?" Trust me, it's awesome.
Cool. Nice. And Brian?
Well, I'm not yet on Disney Plus, so I'm with you, Sam. I'm not there yet. But so I'll just go, and I am watching Watchmen, but I won't say that either. But I was when lift up. I picked up walking through the comic store the other day. I don't know, last week or so. No, it was last week or the week before. But I saw this comic with a woman pastor on the front. Clearly, this sort of thin young woman with a clerical collar on, right? Naturally, immediately my eyes go to it, and it's this book called Steeple by John Allison, and it's put out by Dark Horse. And it's this freshly ordained Anglican priest in the UK, where she goes to this small seaside village where, you know, the story is that the devil's trying to come out of the sea and take the town back, right? And she ends up going to this town where she doesn't know about it, and gets thrown into this parish with a grizzled old priest who literally goes out and fights the devil every night, and then of course is completely distraught by the fact that they sent her a female priest, which I think will work it out. And then the only other thing is that I hope it gets more nuanced, but in town it's the Church of Satan this young female priest bumps into. So she becomes friends with one of the members there. So it's so far I've read the first two. The third one just came out today, so I'm interested to see where that goes. And there's a lot there. I think it's a good it's one of those things like, oh, well, here's a new one. Let me try that one out. The cover certainly is intriguing. And, okay, actually, there might be some meat there. So, yeah. Anyway. Well.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great to have you on.
Thanks for having us.
It was great. I mean, as I said, I mean, you are, in a sense, returning. Since Derek, you were on the panel.
Yeah, I was in the audience.
And Mav, you were there asking questions in the at the end. Yeah. So, but this is I'm glad you guys could come on and do a real full and proper episode. Because I agree, folks should go see the movie Harriet. For the very least, that it's a good story, and
yes.
Definitely want to hear more of it. So, all right. Well, that being said, as always,
and also with you,
geek be with you.